listening to MB Teachers Unplugged, the official podcast of the Manitoba Teachers Society.
Welcome, my beloved members, to episode 2 of MB Teachers Unplugged, the official podcast of the Manitoba Teachers Society. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe on your favorite podcast apps and tell your colleagues about us so we can truly build connection and create community. I'm your host, Zach Schnitzer, he, him, and I'm a staff officer here at the Society in the Professional and French Language Services Department, where I work to support and promote a culture of educator well-being with you, our incredible members. And we hope that this episode accompanies you while you're at work or on your commute, or even while you're engaged in a self-care activity. That's one of the reasons we're doing a podcast. So today, I'm so excited to tell you that we're talking with Virginia Birch. She's a numeracy specialist with Manitoba First Nations Education Resource Center about how she blends cultural teachings and her graduate training in counseling psychology to empower teachers in Manitoba's First Nations schools. She also shares some of the unique realities that face First Nations educators in Manitoba and how they can support their own well-being, and whether we're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, colleagues or leaders, how we can all engage in effective allyship. And finally, Virginia leads me through a visualization exercise called the Canoe Journey, which is mind-blowing. And I just want to say before you listen, some of what Virginia shares may be triggering depending on your background or experiences, particularly the canoe visualization. So do what you need to do to maintain your safety and wellness during this episode. You may want to listen to it more slowly. You might want to skip some parts. You might want to listen with a support person, whatever you have to do. As is customary before each of our meetings at the Manitoba Teacher Society, we recognize our history as a settler organization on these lands. McMaster House and Bradley Square are located on Treaty One lands, the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Anishinaabe, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. The Manitoba Teacher Society respects the treaties that were made on these territories. We acknowledge the harms and mistakes of the past and present, and we dedicate ourselves to move forward in partnership with Indigenous communities in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration. And I just want to say one thing about the land acknowledgement, and I picked this up from a keynote I heard at the Fab Five conference 2 years ago, which is put on by the tireless work of Eric Sejanis, my colleague, and Sarah Gazan, and our amazing admin support staff. And the keynote was Kevin Chief, who's a former MLA for Point Douglas, former VP with the Business Council of Manitoba, among many other things. And he said, the land acknowledgement is only as good as the meaning you put into it every time you say it. So every episode, I'm going to say the land acknowledgement anew, but I'm also going to give a little bit of a reflection on it every episode. And what I want to say is that I think for many of us, we only started using the term genocide when we think about the residential schools. And it only came because of Kamloops and the mass unearthing of graves. And it makes me sick to my stomach that I only started using it with that, when we should have been using it a long time ago. And it's particularly alarming for me because my late father was a second-generation Holocaust survivor. And Holocaust and genocide are in lockstep. If you don't think it's a genocide, it's basically a hate crime. It makes me sick to my stomach. And I'm carrying that now, and it just reminds me of how much I need to learn about truth and reconciliation. So thank you. And now, class is in session, the bell's about to ring, so remember, whenever that bell rings here on the pod or in your school, take a nice, deep breath. So I'm honored to welcome Virginia Birch. She is a numeracy assessment facilitator with Manitoba First Nations Education Resource Center, where she's been for 13 years. She works with schools in a variety of areas of the province, from Red Sucker Lake in the northeast to Sioux Valley in the southwest, and more places. I want to ask you in a second, Virginia. She's a single mom, sun dancer, pipe carrier, helper in ceremony, and recently earned a master's in counseling psychology from the University of Calgary. So welcome to MB Teachers Unplugged, Virginia. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Zach. Thank you for inviting me today.
My pleasure. And we're so honored to have you. You came highly recommended from my colleague, Sarah Gazan. I don't always listen to what Sarah says because she's a prankster. But when she told me about you, I was completely sold. And I'm just joking. I love working with Sarah. So we start the episodes with one question that is sort of a through line, which is, what is something, Virginia, that you do that's your go-to for your own wellness?
For my wellness? I have to go to the sweat lodge. I regularly go to the sweat lodge.
Right.
If I start getting cranky at home, then my kids are like, Mommy, I have to go to the sweat lodge. So I'm a helper there. And it's a way to connect back to my community, to my elders.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the sweat lodge has been my my self-care practice.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you welcome non-Indigenous people there? Because I bet you my kids, my daughter especially, when I get cranky with her, would love to send me somewhere, as would my wife. Usually I just go outside for a walk by myself.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's all different kinds of people that come through there, young, old, from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's for everybody.
It's for everybody. Yeah. It's the People's Lodge.
Right. Well said. Well, I want to circle back to the Sweat Lodge and some of the Indigenous approaches to healing. Just to start off, tell us a little bit about you, your background, Virginia, and how it led you to do some of the work you do now.
I grew up on a reserve back home. I come from a big family. I grew up really traditionally, like going to the trapline with my family. Mm-hmm. I grew up having my cousins around me who were like my brothers and sisters. We're like close-knit. When I was in grade 9, I got shipped out to go to school because I think my parents saw that I was smart academically. So I got sent out to go to school, and I always loved school. I went to Brandon University, got my teaching degree from there, and I taught in the classroom for a bit. I love teaching math. I have my math background.
And let me ask you, if I can, what led you to teaching? Because we were talking about this earlier, that even from birth there was this sort of, you're seen as a helper, and you're given a traditional name.
Yeah, so in First Nation practices, we're all considered helpers. Mm-hmm. That's why we're born into this world. So that is really instilled in you. So my kukum and gumshum, they always said that we had to help each other mm-hmm. out all the time. So that's really instilled in you, that you have to be a helper
mm-hmm.
in any context.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then you came to, how did you come to teaching? How did you know you would want to teach at the classroom?
So when I first went to university, I was in the nursing program, but that didn't really suit me well. Because I almost fainted at the sight of blood. I was trying to change my dad's dressing, and then I almost passed out. But after that, when I was at the university, I supported my income by providing tutoring services in the university with Penn students, at the community college.
Right.
Being a lab assistant to a math prof. So I really liked teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I knew I wanted to become a teacher.
And you loved, you were telling me before, you loved math and science.
Yes.
Particularly.
Yes. So I loved math and science. And I think I could relate a lot of the concepts and apply them because I grew up traditionally like on the land. So it was all about problem solving.
Mm.
Yeah. Nature and science go hand in hand, right?
Of course, of course. And then you taught for a while, and what was it, where did you start teaching?
I was teaching back home in Garden Hill. I taught in St. Therese for a bit. And then I remember doing a workshop, and it was Mr. Ong. Actually, Mr. Ong works at MF NERC. He was a numeracy person.
Is that what you would call it? MF NERC, Manitoba First Nation? Okay, MF NERC. Okay, I love it.
Long acronym for Manitoba First Nation Education Resource Center. So he came and did a workshop, and I remember watching him and listening to him, and he kept picking on me because I was like straight out of the university asking about that curriculum. And then I remember sitting there and thinking, I want his job. I want to do what he's doing, because he was doing all math work, right? And I was getting super excited listening to him. So after the workshop, I made a point of going to him and helping him pack up and carry his things. Yeah. So I asked him, where do you work? Like, and I applied and I got the job.
And you've been there for 13 years.
Yeah, 13 years. So I provide services to communities. I travel. Some are just drive-in. Some are really close, but then others are a long drive, or some are flying communities.
Right, right. And so you provide numeracy support. So tell us a little bit about that role. And then I want to jump to your more recent training in counseling.
Okay. So as a numeracy facilitator, we do workshops in math. We try and do best practices with the classroom teachers. Strategies at work. We try out different things. We also do math programming. So we travel and we provide, deliver services, right? But we also do, we have math round tables here in the city for early years, middle years, and then high school. And we also provide marking sessions for the provincial exams for our high school teachers.
Right.
And we also have two big teacher conferences here in the city, one in the fall, one in the spring. So we get about 1,700 teachers that come in from all over Manitoba. And we just have, we offer math workshops.
Right, right.
I'll give you an example of how we integrated First Nation approaches in math. One of our round tables, we used math as a tool. How would you teach math coming from a holistic perspective? How would you support? So when I say a holistic perspective, I'm talking about like your mind, body, heart, and spirit. So using the medicine wheel concept, that model, we had teachers make a big poster of the medicine wheel. And we labeled each quadrant into the mind, body, heart, and spirit. So we said, we asked them, like, for example, the mind. How would you support the cognitive learning in math?
You're blowing my mind. Okay, keep going. This is amazing.
Yeah, and we would just do that for each of the quadrants. Like, how would you support the emotional part in math? And it's through providing safety and nurturing environment, right? Where students can be risk takers.
Right. Because if they don't feel safe, they're not going to ask. Though you were telling me before about like the therefore symbol, that they're not, people aren't going to ask those questions that they need to ask about math if they're not safe.
Yeah, and I think in this day and age, that's the most important piece for First Nation people, because we are traumatized people.
Yeah.
We are colonized and oppressed people. And when you think about the brain, when you enter a room and if you feel anxious or fear, your brain will hijack, your old brain will hijack the cognitive part, right?
Totally.
And because your limbic system kicks in, and then your old brain, and then you cannot think from using your prefrontal cortex?
Yes.
The thinking part?
Absolutely. I experienced that a lot. I know exactly what you mean. So you can't think straight.
Yeah. So you have to be mindful as a teacher, like how your body language is, what kind of facial expression, your tone of voice.
Yeah.
So all those things matter because your brain naturally picks up what kind of environment you're in. Are you in a safe environment or are you in a nurturing environment?
Right.
Yeah.
And particularly for peoples who are traumatized, you're going to be especially sensitive to unsafe environments. And then what I'm hearing is your prefrontal cortex or that logical mind you need for math isn't going to be able to come online.
Yes, especially for math, because your math, in order to do math work, you need your working memory, and that's in your prefrontal cortex. Yeah.
I wanna get to, because I think there's almost a sandwich here. There's the students, there's the teacher, and I know you do a lot of work with helping the teacher themselves regulate. But I wanted to jump to the spiritual part of math, because when you say, Virginia, that the medicine wheel and math, I find this so interesting. And when I think about the spiritual part of math, I know as myself in Judaism, there's this whole tradition of certain numbers meaning things I don't even understand. Apparently 18 is a high number. That's important. So we give people $180 for their bar mitzvah or wedding. I don't know why, but I think when I think about, you're talking about the spiritual part of math. Can you elaborate on that a bit? That's so fascinating.
So when we did the spiritual quadrant, it was important for us, for our teachers, to feel safe in developing and brainstorming on that part. So that's spiritual in itself. Do you know what I mean?
Tell me more, because of the purposeful nature of it or the connection to something larger with the teachers?
I think because it had to come from their own mind and heart. They had to make a connection, like where's the spiritual aspect, and we couldn't define it for them. Otherwise we would be perpetrating the same colonial and oppressive behavior, or do you understand what
I do? Yeah, I know.
So
what you mean,
that was a little bit sensitive. And we had to be really open-minded, like some of the teachers and their ideas. Like, we had to be, if they said, I can't remember back because that was before pandemic.
Yeah, it's hard to remember anything before the pandemic.
But I remember that we were open to all ideas. Whatever the teacher said was the spiritual part. And a lot of them, they would bring out some of the values and beliefs of First Nation practices, like, for example, our elders say we are loaned our children.
And when I think of teachers and the work I did in the counseling field, so much of teacher well-being was feeling connected to the work they were doing with the students and being able to teach in a way that was authentic to them.
It's all about building relationships.
Yeah.
Having that trust and bonding with the teacher, especially with First Nation teachers. So I guess I could say that I use a lot of my counseling skills with how I relate to my teachers, understanding and having awareness the impacts of Indian residential school. What it's like to work with traumatized people. I'm not saying that we're all traumatized, but we are all impacted.
Yeah.
So when I work with a teacher, I never put myself up. I always tell them, you are the expert because you know what's going on in the classroom. You have your learners. You know your learners. I only know the curriculum. And I always try to encourage them and motivate them. I ask them, what do you want to try out? And then we'll try it out. and then they feel more empowered, I guess, after. Mm-hmm. Like, and I just love it when teachers go, hey, we actually tried my idea.
Yeah.
And they feel excited about that. And that's what makes me happy when I feel like I'm successful.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've given them a voice.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what makes me feel, because teachers, for First Nation teachers, are reluctant to bring forth their ideas, because we are colonized and we've never had a voice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you do that so beautifully in the schools you go to, Virginia. I'm wondering, I'm asking you to solve this problem provincially right now. Totally kidding. But I think you bring a lot of wisdom. How, like, if I think of our 16,000 plus members in Manitoba, and I think of all the First Nations teachers and who may be struggling to have a voice, how can leadership, whether they're Indigenous or not, or colleagues, whether they're Indigenous or not, how can they help support First Nations teachers to feel like they can have a voice and bring themselves to the work?
I think you have to let the reins go. Don't try and control. Have trust in the process. Have trust in your teachers. Those kind of concepts apply in child upbringing, especially when they're transitioning from being an adolescent into adulthood. Like, as a parent, it's really hard to let go of those April strings, and you have to trust your child, trust that you instilled all the right things in them, right? And as human beings, we tend to want to control everything. And as parents too, we want to keep controlling. So
you have to really support the autonomy. And what I'm understanding is, especially for someone who comes from a background, a colonial, like colonized background, they even need more autonomy potentially, because you would be hypersensitive to any sort of effort to control you. Because that's your history, that's your trauma.
Yes, it is. That's the oppression.
Yeah.
It is. That is the oppression, is the control.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as a First Nation person, and because I've been mentored, right, by my elders, sometimes when I reflect on, like, why do I have these challenges? Why have I experienced these things and the impacts I've had as a First Nation person? I have to dig really deep down. Mm-hmm. And I'm a thinker. Sometimes I'm an overthinker, but in my reflection, sometimes I think, as a First Nation person, we have to have patience for our relatives. There's a big teaching behind this whole thing about colonization and being oppressed, and is having patience for our Western relatives. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. Because for me, the way I understand with First Nations, as human beings, as peoples on this earth, we've all been given our own tools to use. We all have universal teachings. We are all striving for the same goal, but we were given different tools to use, different tools we connect with that make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe colleagues in leadership of First Nations teachers, what I'm hearing is they need to let go of control, especially, and trust that person is going to find their own tools and their own way that that is meaningful to them.
Yeah. Trust the process.
Yeah.
Trust that you've instilled enough for the other human being. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that is such a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard to do, giving up control. But I think it's especially important in empowering people who have been oppressed. And I guess if I'm thinking about maybe an individual or collective teacher, if I'm First Nations and I feel disconnected, what advice might you have? Because not everybody can have Virginia Birch come into their school. What advice would you have for that teacher where they can find support or what they can do to feel more empowered? Or where might they go or who to talk to? I know that's another huge question I'm throwing at you.
I think for me, like when I start to feel overwhelmed, when I feel stressed, one of my elders told me it's because you are focusing too much on what other people are doing. So you have to gather yourself and refocus and really remind yourself, what is your goal? What is your purpose? Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that I can control. Mm-hmm. I can't control other people's behaviors.
Right.
Or the things that are happening in my environment.
Right, right. And to what extent are First Nations teachers, maybe I'm thinking more in the public school system, to what extent do many face higher rates of burnout and lack of well-being that we're seeing across the country, especially in Manitoba? Or I guess what I'm asking is, what is for First Nations teachers, we're hearing about huge rates of burnouts generally, and I imagine that's only higher if you're an oppressed people.
Yeah. I work with my teachers closely, and sometimes I'm not there as a math support. I will give space for my teachers if they want to get something off their chest or if they just want to vent. It has been tough, especially during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. A lot of our teachers and principals are talking about the social and emotional well-being, whatever issues are in the community, it does come into the classroom. And there's like a lack of support for human resources, not just human resources, but for also like materials and also for like even having space in the school. But I think one of the latest impacts that we've had lately was the discovery of Kamloops. That's what I would say. Because as colonized and oppressed people, we carry that shame. And after the Kamloops, it opened it up, and all of Canada carried it, not just the First Nation people. So after the Kamloops, it also led us, like we were starting to talk about it more. It's slowly coming along. We've had even some of the survivors who are like elderly teachers, they're still in the school, and they've had sessions where they openly want to share with the teachers, other teachers and students, what their experience was. So even though it was so hurtful, I see a lot of good things coming out now. And it's more like wanting to learn, what does a trauma-informed school look like? What does that mean? Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all learn from that, because I think that's the way a lot of the training is going for educators, is being trauma-informed. You have to be trauma-informed. Mm-hmm. And you talked about it, the Kamloops is, I don't even know if I can use the word tragedy. I think that's underplaying it, but it has maybe opened up the conversation. People are being more open about how important is that, especially for teachers and First Nations background, to talk more openly.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's still really raw.
Yeah.
Yes, because we still have parents that have gone to the residential school. So some of the teachers can't even teach that yet in their classroom, even though there are like learning kids out there. Mm-hmm. So it's a slow process, but I know we're moving along. And also, like, what I like about our communities, about our families, is that we are collective. Mm-hmm. Nobody works in isolation. Mm-hmm. We do things together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a really healing aspect. And also, like, there's more resources about teaching the Indian residential school. We didn't have anything before. So there's starting to be more resources.
Okay, so Virginia, we were going to finish, and then you offered to do the canoe journey with me.
Yeah, it's a visual exercise where I take you and you feel safe.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I am ready.
Sit back in your chair.
Okay.
Are you comfortable?
Yes, now I am.
Okay.
I wasn't at first, now I am.
Close your eyes. I want you to feel your feet on the ground and connect to your breathing. Breathe in and out. In, out. In, out. We are going to a forest. In this forest, you can see the sun rays streaming through the trees, the sounds of the birds singing, the coolness of the earth on your feet, and the rustling of the leaves as the wind blows through them. In this forest, you see a path alongside a river. At the end of the path, you stand beside the river with a cedar canoe. You step into the canoe and start paddling down the peaceful, calm, and gentle waterway. You feel a sense of going home. As the canoe reaches the shore of a calm and peaceful island, you step out of the canoe and onto another pathway. You can hear drums and the most beautiful singing that touches your heart. You follow the path that leads to an open area with a sacred fire and a waterfall where you also see your ancestors. Your ancestors tell you they've been waiting and preparing for you. They embrace you with their kindness and tell you you are in a very safe place where you are loved, protected, seen, felt, understood, accepted, and honored in this calm and peaceful place. Your heart fills with overwhelming love. They give you a basket and tell you to put all of your burdens that are not yours to carry. In this basket, you put your grief, your anger, your rage, your fear, your disgust, and your loneliness are gently placed into this basket. An elderly grandmother takes the basket and places it on an ancient healing rock at the base of the waterfall. Your ancestors bring you to the waterfall, and they wash your hands, your face, and your feet. The ancestors ask you to wash away all the guilt, all the shame, and all the degradation, all the chaos, and all the heaviness of colonization. You feel the water taking away the darkness and soothing your pain, the sun breathing new light into you, and the wind breathing new life, and the trees guarding and protecting you. The ancestors guide you back to the path and tell you to be happy and to feel joy in your life. You make your way back to the canoe. You feel the grass on your legs. You breathe in the fresh, crisp air. You feel the wind on your face as you walk down the pathway. You step back into the canoe and you make your way back across the river back to the forest. You feel refreshed and lighter as you step out of the canoe. Now I want you to feel your chair on your bum. Feel the floor on your feet. Move your arms up, down. Move your legs up, down. Move your head to the right, to the left. Take a deep breath in and out. One more time, in and out. And open your eyes when you're ready.
That, wow. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, now you've set just to finish off here, you've set a very high bar, and now all of my guests, Virginia, have to help me heal very deep psychodynamic traumatic wounds. So if I ask you to be a guest, whoever is listening, watch out. No, this has been wonderful on so many levels, Virginia, and thank you so much, and we're going to have to get you on again, so... Have a wonderful rest of your day. Wow. So I'm fairly speechless right now, folks. I can honestly say that was one of the most powerful experiences in recent memory. And I hope something in the canoe journey or the interview resonated with you. One thing that really resonated with me was that a First Nations cultural ways of knowing that Virginia shared, both on the episode and when we met before the episode, are so rich in many ways, and we can all learn from it. And as someone who is trained in Western psychology, it's kind of humbling because I think in many ways we are just catching up with what First Nations peoples have been doing for thousands of years. And it just makes me want to learn so much more from Virginia and from others. And I'm happy to say she very generously shared a number of resources that we'll include in the show notes, including the canoe journey script, a link to that, a variety of Indigenous organizations and supports in Manitoba that you can find, First Nations perspectives on wellness resources, and an Indigenous allyship toolkit, which she shared a link to. And then she also shared two books. One is called Equity-Centered Trauma-Informed Education, and the other is called Trauma-Sensitive Classroom, Building Resilience with Compassionate Teaching. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to subscribe and tell your colleagues and friends about this so we can truly build connection and create community. We also so value your feedback. Please tell us what you thought about this episode. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MBTeachers, on Facebook at Manitoba Teachers, and on our website, mbteach.org. And you can also email us specifically about the podcast, mbteachersunplugged@mbteach.org. And you can find me on Twitter at Z_Schnitzer, on Facebook and Instagram at ZachSchnitzer48, and via email, ZSchnitzer@mbteach.org. And last but not least, thank you for the incredible work you do. And remember that none of the daily miracles you make happen occur without you.